accession number 9433, reel 8.
Mr. A.J. Smith, Reel 8. I wonder if you could talk a little more about this feint attack you made on the 23rd or 24th of September. Were you under much fire as you attacked along the communication trench?
Along the communication trench, we were well down. It was a deep one dug by the Germans in the old days, and we were well under cover. The only fire we got was when we turned a corner, then one or two bullets came along from Germans who were retiring, and they fired along. Well, then we reached what would have been a sap head, that is, sticking out of this communication trench, and we took up a position there under a regular sergeant, regular army sergeant, and there we had to keep out of the way. Occasional bullets came along from this side, from the flank, left flank. And nobody was killed. No, none of ours were killed. We were about six of us, or seven, I suppose. And we settled in there. The Lewis gun set up, the Lewis gun number one set up the gun, started firing down in the valley, the low ground down there where the Germans were attacking, coming over in single line order, attacking our line. So the Lewis gun did some firing down there at those. The attack ceased, and several of our fusiliers were captured. The piece of line was recaptured, I believe, late in the day, but we were stuck in this very much forward communication trench leading to the German part.
Had you you'd advanced to this position to enfilade the German attack?
To enfilade, yes, and to call there to save the our fusiliers down in the valley who were being shot at. We tried to make other people shoot at us, other Germans shoot at us, so that they couldn't shoot down there. This feint was to draw attention off and draw it onto ourselves to give them down below a bit more chance.
How many were involved in this of the two companies?
Of the two companies, there would only be about six or seven of us in that section. And then the companies down below would be involved, I suppose, captured perhaps about eight or nine. It was all very
So this is a very
effort.
Small
It's fight. A very small effort that can happen. And we were pushed along, I say, to draw the fire off the ones down in the valley. They were in the danger spot. We were up fairly high, well, 100 feet above them, I expect, on a long slope.
What sort of effect did the Lewis gun fire have on the German attack?
It must have discouraged... it must have helped quite a bit. Whether it caused casualties, we didn't see any Germans fall. They were quite smallish looking in their tin hats, which came right down over their heads. We watched it going on. We did fire... we didn't fire any rounds ourselves because we were carrying the ammunition for the Lewis gun. And things quietened down then, and the younger part said to the sergeant, "What about going back? You know, we're stuck out here." He said, "No, she'll get a runner will come and tell us to come back, and we stay here till then." Now that was regular army, and very good, of course. There's no question. We'd asked him several, or suggested it nicely, several times, and each time, "No, until a runner arrives, we stay here."
Were you a bit nervous being exposed like that?
We weren't nervous, but we thought it was asking for unnecessary trouble. And and he was regular army trained, man of 40 probably. We didn't know him. He'd been brought in because of the heavy casualties of the 21st. And he stuck to his post. I mean, he made us stick to the post. Eventually a runner came along and said, "Come back." So then we all drifted back again having to walk across these dead Germans, two or three dead Germans that the Mills bombs had killed, and back into our own little line, well, the front line, which was a German line originally. And we were there then for another day or so, I suppose. And then the corporal in charge of the gun, he got it on the parapet for some reason, I suppose another scare or something, and a bullet caught him in the fleshy part of his left arm. Not serious, but of course we whipped his tunic off. We went to the bottom of his tunic where there was a bottle of iodine. We all carried that. We broke the glass bottle, poured the iodine where he was wounded, wrapped him up with his bandage, which every soldier carried, and off he went smiling all over his face because he was going back, hopefully, with a blighty. I doubt that it was heavy enough for that, it was bad enough, but it was clean through the fleshy part of the arm, plenty of blood, but he was all smiles, naturally.
Did you all look forward to a blighty wound?
Well, we hadn't got to that stage, but the older ones longed for it. I mean, we were still very young and so on. And in this case, funny point, when we took this bit of trench over for these two or three days, the people who went out left some tins of pork and beans, and we just devoured them. So I guess we were newish, because the old soldiers sneered at pork and beans. There was very little pork and a lot of beans, but we opened the tins straight away and ate them. We were young, hungry, and newish. So that was just by the way. But we were then back in this line for another day or so. Then we were relieved by, I've forgotten who, we relieved some London troops. I forget who relieved us. Probably, I forget now, but we filed out and went back to another half mile, perhaps there's some more shell holes and places. And we were then, we've got near the end of September, that's right, we were then so under strength, the whole division, I believe, we were, that we were no longer really a proper fighting unit. And within a day or so we did a bit of a march, and then numerous buses and things like that picked us up and drove us up north, the whole division. They dropped us somewhere, I'm not sure where, but where we camped sort of for a night. A funny thing happened there. We'd made a bonfire, a little fire to sit round our little group, the Lewis Gun group. The Lewis Gun number one was, we'd had another one sent to us, was cleaning his revolver. Suddenly the little bonfire was scattered. He'd forgotten that there was a round in the barrel and the breech, and of course in cleaning it thoroughly he'd touched the trigger and there it hit the fire. And the joke of it is to me, none of us worried, oh well, that's that. I mean, it was a funny thing to happen, and nobody took the least notice about it. I mean, we just laughed because the fire shot out, spark shot out well and truly. He was surprised, but there were no remarks made. He merely continued cleaning, and we were doing whatever we were. And that was just by the way. And then we've now reached, oh yes, then we did a bit of marching and arrived at ACK, A-C-Q. It was a sort of forestry piece of ground. It was on the way to Vimy, we found, just soon afterwards. And so it means the whole division's moved up, we've all gone up, we're weak, we're very under strength, and so on. And at ACK, I don't know why, but I got picked for, it would be called unlucky in those days to be picked, instead of resting, picked to go on sentry duty, on guard. There'd be about eight of us in a sort of hut. This was a camp, a regular camp, a big place, in trees and that, very quiet. And I was stuck there on the main entrance, which was a sort of about the width of this room, not quite, and there were trees everywhere. Anyhow, out of the eight, you each took it in turn for a couple of hours. I was doing my 2 hours in the daylight, and we were under a tree which was shedding nuts, very flat, thin nuts, whatever they were, I don't know, but I was busy holding a rifle in the left hand instead of the right and picking up nuts very busily to eat. And I looked up, and to my horror, the Major General Higginson, our divisional commander, strolled along and came up to me. And I sloped, I put the rifle back in the right hand, sloped arms and called out, you shout, call out the guard. No, that's right, guard. Yes, you call out the guard, you shout like mad. The guard tumbled out, and in charge of a corporal, they lined up. We presented arms, seeing that he was Major General, and he looked us all over, and then he chatted with the corporal, who was a very able man, been in South America. He was probably 35. He was well educated and so on. Anyhow, the general chatted him up and said, now, why aren't you an officer? And so on. And in the end, it had the effect of this corporal going away to become an officer, which meant he missed the rest of the war, I expect. Anyhow, he was very... And then the best and sweetest memory of all is the general said to the corporal, a very good sentry, corporal. He actually said, a very good sentry, corporal, and wandered off. Very nice. I mean, that's something, because it was a terrible offence, especially to be found by a general. He was the sort that walked round. I knew him because after the Hardicourt affair, he wandered amongst us young people and chatted us up then. So I knew him well by sight. And anyhow, that was just by the way, but it happened, and my opinion of generals went up quite a lot from that, because the corporal never knew what had happened. Not that he'd have worried too much, being what he was, well educated, well travelled, came from South America. Anyhow, that happened.
What was morale like at this point within the battalion?
A battalion, it was very good, because we were not in the fighting and we were being fed regularly. We were seeing entirely new country. The Somme is the Somme. Vimy is quite a different world of hills and roads. And it was quite good. The morale was good. Officers were arriving, and we'd lost so many, but they were gradually filling up. And so the morale was good.
Was there no disillusionment about all the men you'd lost, Effie?
No, strangely enough, that you didn't think much about that, I'm afraid. You just knew that it had happened, and I merely thought of one of the chaps who's... I'd seen his father and mother, very ordinary folks, but very, very good, hard-working people. They came to the Chatham Barracks, so I happened to know them. But apart from that, I'm afraid you just carried on to the next day and the next day and the next day, and you were under orders all the time, so you didn't have to worry about what you were going to do. You knew that was being arranged for you, strangely.
You had no fears of another major attack or anything?
No. And anyhow, you would never hear of it until the day till it happened, so you just carried on chatting. The joy of the whole thing is you chat to anyone you met. If you were wandering along a bit of trench or in this forest, you chatted to whoever you met. It was a wonderful time, really. Everyone just chatted along. It was a very good experience, really, the fact that wherever you were, you talked to whoever you met, and they talked to you, and so on. Anyhow, then we marched off properly, and marched along and saw a place. We saw Petit Vimy, which apparently was a village just outside Vimy itself, Petit Vimy. And we passed that and then arrived at what was overlooking Vimy, and we took in a trench. We got into a trench there. We had the usual amusement. As you're going along, the guide takes you and he says, now, you're going to pass over a road here, and it's not fully dug out, wasn't possible, and you've got to run because there's a sniper place not watching it. So what happens, you go along, you pause, and then you run. One runs, and then there's a gap, and then the next one runs over, and you can nip along loaded how you are. then, and nobody was shot. But I mean, it is, it's quite something. You just nip along, although you're loaded up with extra ammunition, a great jersey, a leather coat in that time. Anyhow, we arrive at a decent line.
So this is the front line.
And they're coming up towards it. Oh, no, the Germans have gone back well and truly. We look down from this hill onto Lens, or Lens now, but they call it Lens then. And that was a mining town there with the mine shaft, the mine, whatever you call them, and all that. We're looking down on that, very interested. And we're in very excellent Canadian trenches by now. The Canadians had that place for a long while. They attacked Vimy, I think it was 1917, and captured it. And everything was spick and span. We moved forward a little bit from there to the Drocourt-Queant line. Now, that was something the Germans had put up that they were going to defend to the end, I believe. But that was a very efficient wall. Concrete in many places, it was concrete built. Astonishing place. Queant-Drocourt, it went quite a number of miles. And we occupied that for a little while, still nobody firing at us or anything like that. The Germans were just hurrying away. They missed their stand in that line, and we enjoyed being in it. The sun was shining, and a very quiet life for us. Then, from then, we went forward in odd stages, and not fighting, not really fighting or anything like that, merely occupying what was being left by the Germans. Not ourselves only, there would be another battalion would go through and wander forward. Every now and again some of them were stopped and a few killed, but it didn't happen to us when we moved forward. It was a strange atmosphere. The officers, the few that had come up that had been before, and they were very interested in seeing everything again, and terrifically pleased, of course, that we were going forward and the Germans were leaving and going back.
Were you aware that the war was coming to an end?
Not yet. Oh, no. No, there was no thought of the war coming to an end at that date, because now we're what? In the beginning of October, aren't we? Yes, we're running into the beginning of October. So we still move forward. We were delighted at seeing a town down there, which was Lens, which had been so important early in the war. And then we moved on, quaintly, started moving through built-up villages and little towns. We didn't see any civilians because apparently the Germans moved them out, and we passed plenty of barns burning at night if we were moving forward. You'd see a barn burning over there, a barn somewhere, a mile or two over there. They just destroyed everything they could.
Did they leave any booby traps of any sort?
The booby traps, we were not involved in the booby trap position there. That had been on the Somme, and a couple of Royal Engineers would come along with no equipment except a pair of pliers and a gas mask, and they would go down any dugout first. But we've left that part of the world, and that was on the Somme. They would go down, it was a terrific job really, and try and see if there were any booby traps. I say they had a pair of pliers and no equipment, just travelled light, and they had to go and find if there were any. Got used to it.
Were you warned not to touch things?
Yes, warned not to touch anything down the dugout. And dugouts were very pleasing because they were deep. And the German dugouts, we never did such things, of course. The Germans always dug themselves in. We apparently thought we were above that sort of thing. So I spent the next two or three weeks going through villages in the proper advancing order, platoon split into two parts, men on each side of the road, the officer and the sergeant probably walking in and out along the road. Ahead of the sections walking along the road, you had people in front, two, one on each. They were to get the first bullets and tell us when any trouble was on. Two well ahead of, here's our platoons marching here on each side of the road, and there's two men, one on each side, well ahead, so they'd be shot at, or they'd see what was happening or find out something. Not a very nice job, but Lewis gunners weren't given that job. We had to stop whenever people went back. Anyhow, we did that for several days now. At night, I remember, in one little town, we slept in the basement of a very large house, and there was an unexploded shell which had come through the wall over there on the floor. We took no notice of it whatsoever. We just put ground sheets on the concrete and slept very well. Meanwhile, that meant some other company had gone through the day before, the night before. That went on for several days, wandering along like that, until we reached more open country, when still seeing no civilians whatsoever. Then we reached some more open country in a village where the outposts, rather the forward people, the pair, as they were going along the road, there was a left-hand sharp turn in the distance, and bullets started hitting onto the paved, the paving of the road. And so then we all stopped, of course, and they came back a bit. That meant the enemy were on some high ground, which we could see on the left there. So there we are in this village, and mind you, we've got to go on. The officer's had his job, was being told to go on in his instructions. So we eventually reach this left-hand turn, and there's a ditch on either side of this lane sort of place. So we dive into the ditch, which had got a certain amount of water in, and because we've now reached a sort of country where it's all beet sugar, I suppose. We thought there were turnips and probably beet sugar, now I know. And we then wandered along this this ditch, part on each side, part of the platoon on that part, another platoon over there. And we come to a point where bullets are hitting the paving rather badly and sending up sparks. So we had a young officer in charge of us who never had any fighting, so he didn't know what to do. And so we crouched down in this ditch. Next to me was the sanitary man of the company, I suppose. Everybody was, we were so under strength that all the odds and ends, in the ordinary they wouldn't have been with us, were with us. And this chap was a man of 40, very nice sort of man. I'd only saw him that day. He came from West London. He wouldn't take cover, no. At 40 you do funny things, apparently. You're not keen to you just don't, you're above it. And he had a slice taken off the back of his head, spattered us all with his brains, and just gave a grunt and was gone. That showed it was Fort Mould, we found afterwards, the name, M-A-U-L-D-E, Fort Mould, which was next to Mont de la Justice. And there we are, stuck on the road. Well, now, along the road comes the Colonel Van Someren, who was acting brigadier, the brigadier being on leave. He comes along with our captain, who we didn't know, but he'd been brought up from reserve somewhere, and he wants to know. He jumped down into our side. He was very unpleased or very displeased with not pushing forward, so he had a few words with the officer. He then dived back, went back on the road, but the bullets were hitting up, so he hopped in the ditch the other side. And then we came to that awkward point, thinking now an officer has to give instructions. So he gave instructions to a sergeant and several men to advance across the fields towards this hill ground. Well, I regret to say they were all shot down quite easily, of course. But an officer has to, I mean, probably privates like ourselves might sit tight forever, unless there was some, well, we never knew. But anyhow, he then wandered back, partly along the ditch and along the road, to drum up a few shells and things like that. And we, meanwhile, got out of the ditch, got into the field behind some, there were various clumps of trees, and no, we didn't. We stayed in that position until night came on. Then another new officer came up, and he went along in the dark, with several troops, and unfortunately he was shot down dead. That was he only came up just that evening, I suppose. Yes, sent up by the colonel, undoubtedly, but he was making an advance going towards this travel, this mount, and so after that I suppose we got some orders from somewhere. We went off into the field, nipped across the field, got behind some trees and things, and then we were lucky enough to have a couple of agricultural labourers in our little group. They started removing the turf and making shelter. You couldn't dig down because the water, once you dug down about 10 inches, the water was there. It was all that low-lying Flemish country. So these agricultural chaps pushed, mind you, we tried to help, but they pushed us out of the way and dig. My word, they knew how to dig. And so they made a very good couple of shelters for our little group, and we remained there listening, two listenings, others sleeping. An officer came along to visit us, another new officer. It was they must have been gathering them up for him wherever they could. We remained then we moved once or twice in that, and then we learnt something from the older man. The corporal was in charge, had been over there 2 or 3 years. There was a ditch with a lot of water in. We had to jump it. Well, he just threw his rifle over, thing you're taught never to part with your rifle, and jumped, landed clean. We all kept our rifles and landed in the water and staggered out. But that's experiences against youth. That sort of thing went on for two or three days, I suppose.
What was the date approximately you first came up against Fort Mould?
About September, October the, probably October the 20th, possibly, 19th, 18th. It's, we got all our fortnight. Yes, probably about the 20th or so, about that sort of date. Anyhow, they then took us, they then said, well, we can get back into the village. So we went back into the village, no civilians. We each were spread out into houses. And then, I'm sorry to say, in a way, we had some lively people with our little group. They just went in the garden, dug some vegetables, got some bully boof. We had a wonderful stew that evening. There are people like that, we discovered, you know, that can adapt and get on. Mind you, we didn't destroy anything, we just ate some of the vegetables. There were no rabbits to eat, the hutches were all empty. There were very rabbity people there, but all the hutches were empty. They were searched. Anyhow, we then lit a fire, this is very bad, in the basement, in the cellar of the house that I was in. We were down there, it was very cold, so several of them got some wood and lit a fire. Along came an officer, and he had to do what he had to do. He had put that out at once, because it was drifting smoke out, and on a night that can be seen all day. So that was put out amongst grumbling when he'd gone, good-humoured grumbling. And then after that, by that time the Germans had been forced off Fort Mould.
Was this the village of Mould?
I should think it's a village. I can't remember. See, there were no names of villages. We previously, over the Somme, every place was named.